This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Frieda Liu. You're listening to Her Vantage, and this is where we speak to women of influence and leadership. The woman in front of me, I've spoken to her before, but she comes now under a different hat. So the endeavor for a more inclusive and gender equal world has never been stronger today. Gender equality has come under a spotlight across many industries, and the architecture industry is in much need of that spotlight. So I have with me architect Lillian Tay, recently appointed president of Pertubuhan Architect Malaysia, or PAM, and the second woman to be elected as the PAM president since it was established in 1967. Whoa, for over 50 years already, the association. So with this role, you know, what do you hope to do? You know, what are your aspirations for the association?
Well, I have this year set up a few new committees. I felt that it was time that the institute and the work of the institute also engage more current and imperative global agenda. I set up a new committee that address sustainability, climate change, mm-hmm. and the new urban agenda. Mm-hmm. We do have a PAM together with the Association of Engineers of Malaysia. We had initiated the Green Building Index, green rating tool for buildings 10 years ago. But that's providing the service to help to certify green buildings and to promote green buildings. But I wanted to have a committee within our institute to have to engage more young people in this process, so that it's not so that that's more an advocacy and engagement process to help build greater awareness and get more people to be aware that of the need to act now for the future. As you know, even Kuala Lumpur also is now adopting for their new local plan for the next 20 years, their aspirations to be a low carbon city.
Right.
Yeah, I think the previous one, we aspired to be a world-class city. Mm. And now I think they also have that aspiration to address these issues, which we must take a long-term right. view and long-term action on. Another committee I had started is for this year is a committee on gender equity. So a few women are working on that to look at how we can promote greater gender parity in mm. our profession, especially mm-hmm. Which has those big gaps. Mm. And another aspect that I also started, another committee, is the Committee on Community and Social Responsibility. I do wanted to highlight that this is one of the roles of architects, that architecture does more than just buildings, that we do create spaces that affect our lives.
Yeah.
Right. And we wanted to be also more inclusive. Mm. The lady, for instance, who is running this committee, she had been a long-time advocate for special needs children. So she brings that aspect into the committee. She's looking at how to improve, for instance, even the ATM machines, such that it can be used by blind people
right.
more easily. Because right now we take it for granted, it's mm. so easy. But for them, there are not enough queues and not enough assistance that they can use any ATM that right. they need along the way.
Mm. It's beyond buildings, right? I mean, if you look at about developing a whole area, it's about how livable it is. Do I want to come back to this area? You know, there's you know, like you go to certain cities and you're like, wow, this is so well planned. You know, everything that's sort of like, whether I have kids or whether I want to do sporting activities, this is such a well-planned city, right? Everything, of all that are some of the considerations we have, right?
Yeah, well, I think we've done a lot to KL, mm-hmm. But still more needs to be done. In my practice, we've been looking at is also how our buildings together cumulatively can upgrade and improve the public realm. That's mm. the space between buildings that, you know, can be a no man's land.
Right.
That's where the sidewalks are and the streets, the street edges and the little squares, the opportunities for little squares that we can create with each building. So that's something that's more in my work at my company, Veritas. It's not easy to juggle both the duties of being a president of PAM as well as being a director at Veritas.
Right. You know, you're talking about the communities you started, the gender parity and all that, right? So what are you hoping to do? Equal pay? What are things you're hoping the community will work out or find out?
Okay, one of the things that I had realized from looking at the statistics within my own company, well, you know, about 2-3 years ago, there was quite a lot of attention to the gender pay gap among in architecture firms globally. I think that came out in Britain, and in 2017, Britain had passed the Equality Act, so there was a lot more attention. That act actually requires mandatory reporting on gender pay gap for large firms, I think that employ people more than 250 people. I think it's a good example for many other countries to follow, and hopefully will follow suit. So anyway, in my company, I started to look at the salaries of our own staff, especially at the more senior level. And I did realize that there was a pay gap. I mean, I have to say, I'm surprised. You know, I'm a business owner, and but of course, I did not look directly. It's not it's an area under our HR for some women working in the same level and being as effective and working as hard as some of their male colleagues. That there was a pay gap somehow evolved over time.
Right? So how did it? Yeah.
Yeah, it was. It was a substantial gap, 15-25%. So I made the decision that we had to even it out immediately. So they got a nice pay rise that year, so that we can, you know, lead in addressing this issue of gender pay gap. And I think the onus is really on many women business owners to take that initiative, because it'll be slow to happen if it were just left on its own.
And I'd be interested to know also, like, on the side of the person, right, whether, you know, are women not in conversation, not for this, for today, but whether, you know, are we not as good in negotiating and bargaining in the first place in terms of salary, right? I mean, I'm just thinking, right? I mean, we like to say, how come you didn't look at it that way from the HR perspective, but also looking at the women, are we not as good at negotiating a certain package?
Well, that's a very good question, Frida. I think women tend to be less demanding, I think, for themselves. Perhaps it's that tradition of, you know, of having to care for kids and care for parents. As you know, the primary role of that all often falls to the woman. They are indeed they are not as fast to promote themselves, I think, even among the within their own companies,
right,
and to demand. It is true. And and they tend to have, I think, a great sense of loyalty as well to the company. So they are not sort of not as often job hopping, which is, of course, one way to
increase your salary as well. Yeah.
So perhaps that. And I think women tend to be slow to promote themselves in general. And in fact, I would say architects tend to be quite slow to promote themselves.
So we'll find out with that community. We'll find out. These are some of the questions the community will be, I suppose, looking at.
Yeah, I think so. Also, I did another committee that I had started. Actually, it started earlier as a subcommittee, but I've made it into a full committee and led by some very, very experienced practitioners in architecture. It's a committee to promote the profession, to promote architecture, because I believe that we are quite undervalued as a profession. PAM actually had done some research into salaries of our architects.
Overall.
Yeah, this is overall. And there are about 13,000 people employed as architects in Malaysia, even though there are only 2,000 registered to practice. And we detected that from 2010, over the last 6-7 years, there was a very stagnant salary growth. There was not more than 0.5% growth in salary per annum. And that is absolutely deplorable.
Right. Are you looking at increasing the number of members as well to join the association?
Yes, we will try to engage more of the younger architects, because as you can see, there are many graduate architects. The fact that there are 13,000 people working effectively as architects is reflected in the numbers for income tax from LHDN, but only 2,000 registered. There is a very large pool of resources. It also means that our capacity is very good, because if you look at the numbers, even though it looks like 1 to 15,000 architects in Malaysia, but the number is closer to 1 to 3,000, which is actually a good number. That's the number aspired for by the UIA, which is the Union of International Architects for Developed Nations. So that's one aspect of the emphasis at PEM this year, which is to promote and to make known that the capability is there, you know, as in architecture services. I think the same applies for engineers as well, because one of the things we've noticed in 2016, the government suddenly noticed that there's a very large deficit in the trade of professional services in the sector of architectural engineering services. 7 billion is a lot.
Right.
That means there's a net outflow of fees of that amount. The figure currently, I think, in the last 2 years, 2017 and 18, is around 3 billion. That is still a large figure. So I have made it one of the main points of my work this year is to highlight that and to work with the relevant parties such as MITI, MATRADE, to further promote export of services, and also to make more known that we do have the capacity in Malaysia, we do have the talent in Malaysia, and that there is a lot of benefit to reduce the imported services. I think that probably is not just for architecture. I believe the lawyers and accountants face similar issues.
Right.
And that translates to really, in the end, more jobs. You know, one architect, we also have looked at the statistics, the average, like one architect can create jobs averaged over the whole profession. 4 to 5 jobs, and each project can create 10 to 20 jobs.
Right, right.
So looking at it from the aspect of contributing to the GDP and job creation, it is very important, I think, for this pool of very capable professionals that we have in Malaysia, of architect professionals, to really take advantage of the very intense building that we have. You know, we have a great propensity to build. We have so many tall buildings and iconic tall buildings. And of course, the demographics there's also very still positive, population growth that has driven this intensive building in the last 20 years.
All right, I'm here with architect Lillian Tay, who has been the recently appointed president of Pertubuhan Architect Malaysia, or PAM. I will continue our conversation in just a moment. This is Her Vantage, BFM 89.9.
Behind Famous Men, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
You're listening to Her Vantage on Enterprise, is where we speak to women of influence and leadership. Frida Liu here. I'm speaking to architect Lillian Tay from Veritas, also recently appointed president of Pertubuhan Architect Malaysia, PAM, and the second woman to be elected as the PAM president since it was established in 1967. You know, one of the things that you've also developed is this whole talk, Greening Malaysia, which is a book by the association.
Yes, we have just launched this book called Greening Malaysia on the occasion of the 10th anniversary of the Green Building Index, Sundaram Berhad, which is a company started by PAM, initiated by PAM together with the Association of Consulting Engineers of Malaysia. It's a sort of professionals-driven green rating tool for buildings, and not just buildings, also townships are also can also be assessed for their sustainability performance. So since we started this tool 10 years ago, the number of buildings that has been certified is around 500. And that amounts to about 22 million square meters of gross floor area that has been certified green. And that amount of green buildings that has been certified and built in the last 10 years since the inception of our GBI rating tool, results in savings of about 390 million ringgit in energy costs. That's very substantial.
Right.
So we do hope that there will continue to be greater awareness and the impact of choosing to build a green building instead of a normal building.
Right.
Because construction industry accounts for almost 30% of the greenhouse gas emission.
Right.
That's the average figure. So when we build buildings that have a commitment to reduce its energy costs and to reduce its carbon footprint, not only does it promote, I think, a better quality of living, working in that building, it also has great impact on the overall push that we need to address climate change.
Right.
I think it's very visible now, even in Kuala Lumpur. You can see we've got, the monsoon seasons are all sort of have shifted.
Yes.
And we've hit, for instance, 100-year levels in terms of rainfall. I think last Ramadan, one of the days, Kuala Lumpur had a rainfall that hit the 100-year limit.
Right.
So it's we're actually seeing very climate change right in front of our eyes. Mm. So buildings being a big contributor to it, I do believe have a big obligation to do its part.
Do you think things will change, like by law, every building should be green moving forward?
That's a very good question. Mm. That's a question that we need to ask ourselves. I think for instance, in Kuala Lumpur, City Hall used to, ask for buildings to be green as a incentive for higher density development.
Mm.
And that's a good thing, and I hope that they continue to practice that. Let me also quote an example of Singapore. In Singapore, all buildings above 20,000 square meters are actually required to be certified green.
Right.
So I think they have made a strong commitment to ensure large buildings, especially, will do their part in reducing their carbon footprint and GHG emission. So I do believe that's a good example to follow. I do hope that our building authorities will do their part. Perhaps it needs to be mandatory at the initial stages until it becomes second nature.
Mm.
And then after that, it can then be voluntary. Because I do see that if it's voluntary, the initial cost, and there is an initial cost, maybe it costs about 2 to 3 to 5% more, depending on the level of green sustainability features that you want to put in the building. Of course, as I mentioned earlier, the payback is there in energy savings alone over time. But I do hope that there will be more commitment. I think Penang has been very committed.
Mm.
They do impose a green certification on many of the buildings. I think credit to the Penang government for taking a very strong position on that. In fact, right now, today, they're having their Green Carnival in Penang. Celebrating the achievements of Penang, I think, in the sustainability drive. I hope that many local authorities will also do their part, because that is the beginning. If it's imposed as an incentive, that will certainly help a lot to make a very substantive reduction in the impact.
So we're going to offer the carrot instead of the stick?
Both as an incentive.
Right.
I think also... the other aspect too that needs the carrot and stick, because especially the city authorities, I think the obligation there is very, I think it's imperative that they do their part to encourage it, because they have already, for instance, KL has already declared that its goal is to be a low carbon city by 2030 and to reduce the current GHG emissions by up to 70%. So that will be difficult to achieve if building developers, building owners, potential building owners do not make the commitment to make the buildings green. So I would advocate that it may be made mandatory for large buildings and high density buildings.
One other question I want to ask with is you're involved in the Kampung Bahru Master Plan, right? And you know, is that an exciting project you're working on?
Well, that's in my capacity as one of the directors of Veritas. Mm. We were honored that we were given the opportunity to work on this from a year ago. Of course, I know there has been a lot of press on this issue since the master plan was, and of course, the whole Kampung Bahru redevelopment was launched last week. Well, I would like to highlight that there are some very strong points for the redevelopment of Kampung Bahru. Kampung Bahru, the area for redevelopment, comprises around 190 acres. That's very substantial. Mm. And it's that's almost twice the area of the KLCC development, which is just across the river from it. So it's very central. It's in a very central location. And I think there will be a lot of potential to redevelop it. The whole impetus of the redevelopment is really in a way to balance out the overall development in Kuala Lumpur. In the last 20 to 30 years, we've seen intensive development, and they tend to be commercially driven. So there's a lot of commercial space put into KL overall. You can see it in KLCC, in TRX, and generally across the city. And of course, living in the city has become very expensive. So the Kampung Bahru redevelopment offers an opportunity to balance out this, to allow people a chance to live in the city. Mm. The whole master plan really envisions 70% of it to be residential. Mm. So it will bring back a lot of people to live in the city, right at the heart of the city, because it's really directly, it's within 10 to 15 minutes walk to KLCC, which is the commercial hub. So that will help a lot in the overall development of the city. As you know, we face big congestion problems in Kuala Lumpur. Right. And if we created more opportunities for people to live in the city, they can walk to work, they can cycle to work. That is one of the sort of overall impetus of this master plan, is to create homes in the city. This master plan will create about 45,000 new homes in the city that will basically allow the population, the current people living in Kampung Bahru, which is around 18,000, it will be able to offer homes for about 160,000 to 170,000 people. Right. So it will, this is the long-term aspiration for Kuala Lumpur. See, we have put in place a lot of the public infrastructure, the public transportation. We've already done the LRT, we've got the monorail, we've got the MRT1, and the MRT2 is in progress. So by the time MRT2 is finished, we've got public transportation infrastructure in the Kuala Lumpur city centre, including for Kampung Bahru, that can actually serve a much higher density. Currently, the current public transportation is highly underutilized. It's working, it's probably utilized to about 25% of its capacity. So we need to get a lot of people into the trains, you know, onto the streets. And KL has done a lot of work to improve the walkability in the city. So Kampung Bahru being so close to, you know, the Golden Triangle, so close to Sultan Ismail, so close to KLCC, it's the perfect place to develop homes. We look at it as architect and planners as that, you know, of course, there are other issues on the whole redevelopment process, you know, how to rehouse and resettle the whole thing. It's a very large exercise, and I do commend the effort that had been taken by by DBKL and by the Federal Territory Ministry that had been spearheading this. I think the redevelopment will bring a lot of benefits to Kuala Lumpur overall.
Right.
I'm not just talking about the Kampung Bahru community, to which, of course, it will also bring benefits. And the master plan has been very cognizant of the strong features of Kampung Bahru. And as you know today, it's an enclave which has a lot of the traditional Malay culture in it. There are lots of wonderful old Malay timber houses still existing. And the master plan includes preserving these. The inventory has been done of all the houses, old houses dating up to 100 years old.
Wow.
And these will be kept. They will be preserved, and some of them will be relocated to recreate, to reinforce actually the old kampung fabric that has been in Kampung Baru. And about 25 acres of, there will be a park which is, which we propose to be called Taman Warisan Kampung Baru, that will house these some of these old restored houses. So the heritage element has been a driving force in the whole creation of the master plan, contrary to some of the comments made. I think the model is available to be inspected at PKB's office.
Right.
That they will see that there is a heritage park. So there are some of these cultural factors built into the master plan that perhaps did not
come across
the initial when people are more concerned
and
about
and I think people are always just sort of resistant to change and you know and what could you be up to, you know, so I guess it's an ongoing exercise, you know, for that conviction to happen.
I do believe that it has laid the roots to reinforce the existing community living there. Those who have moved away may want to actually move back. There will be lots of housing, and the minister had promised that 50% of the housing will be in the affordable range.
Right.
So that's an amazing opportunity to create affordable housing in the city.
Right.
And I think if we look at that aspect, one must surely see the benefits of the redevelopment.
So anyway, you as the president of PAM, you got your work cut out for you. Of course, there's always the sustainability and green building factor that you're looking into. And then you're talking about a committee set up for gender parity and also a committee to look into the community and special needs, right? That these are some of the things that you've got under your
agenda for this year.
For this year,
to engage more with the community at large and global agenda, besides our own professional issues, and which is also being taken care of in my efforts to show the real figures in the profession, that the capacity is there, and there's a need to take pride in the capacity of Malaysians and the human capital that could be that should be nurtured and further given value.
Right. You got your work cut out for you.
Indeed.
Thanks for being with us again. I've been speaking to architect Lilian Tay from Veritas and also president of Pertubuhan Architect Malaysia, or PAM. This is BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.